Every family we interact with has a different culture. Every family that we interact with has a different experience, and we should be students of what that is.
Certainly the thing that it does is that it enhances the chances that there's going to be a reunification of the family. You know, the ultimate goal, if safe and appropriate, is reunification, and that's what's best for kids, is to be returned to their family of origin.
Welcome to the first episode of this five-part podcast series for the Family Contact Improvement Partnership, or FCIP. This partnership was developed in 2017 between the Butler Institute for Families, Rock Mat Sioux, and the local Office of Children's Services in Wasilla, Alaska. This partnership has a goal of improving the availability, frequency, and quality of family contact for families involved in the local child welfare system. This podcast is intended for everyone. Whether you're a community member or someone who has been involved with the system as a child, parent, extended family, foster parent, or even attorney, the structure and delivery of child protective services impacts us all. And if you're wondering what family contact even means, don't worry, we'll dive deep into all of that and the implications it has for children and families. Through this five-part series, we will cover topics including culturally centered family contact, the impact that implicit bias can have, how OCS workers can partner with parents, engage foster parents and biological parents together, and much more. My name is Kristen Clark, and I'm a social worker here in Alaska. Today, I'm joined by my co-host, Emily Houck.
Hi, I'm Emily Houck. I currently work for Alaska Family Services, one of the initial agencies that joined with the Family Contact Improvement Program.
Today, we're going to talk about the shift from a child-centered approach to a family-centered approach in child protective services and some of the tension that's been created because of this shift. What's the history there?
Historically, family contact was just 1 hour a week supervised by a professional, and it was more punitive than collaborative with the courts and the families. Moving forward, the new model is to be more parent-centered, where you're focusing on the whole family that may already have had trauma in their lives. The parent-centered approach is more collaborative between the lawyers, the judges, the courts, the foster parents, and hopefully to get foster parents and kinship relatives on board with supervising families themselves, either in the home or in a community setting, which is more natural for the child.
Yeah, and some of the difference now is that this family-centered approach recognizes that really meeting the needs of the entire family holistically is what is in the best interest of children. And that's what we really want to promote, this collaborative partnership between parents, foster parents, and the whole team. And I think that this approach really helps families to build their capacity to have safety created for their children. And having a strengths-based approach like this also reduces the risk of repeat maltreatment. So we're hoping to help create safety in a way that families don't come back through this child welfare system a second time. When we aren't looking at a family holistically and we aren't looking at their strengths, we're not engaging in true partnership. We're not helping a family move forward in a way that allows them to be successful and create the safety that affects all of us, right? If we increase the safety that families are experiencing in their own homes, we increase the safety of our community and the partnership we're having as a whole. We reached out to Joy Petrie, the state director of Alaska CASA, who's had a long career as a CASA volunteer, a guardian ad litem. And so she's seen firsthand how a family-centered approach can really impact outcomes for children and families.
Now, Kristen, you mentioned a CASA. Let's talk a few minutes about the terms that you may hear today. A CASA stands for a court-appointed special advocate. They're typically volunteers. Most times they work for a GAL, which is the guardian ad litem. These individuals are appointed by judges to advocate for the child's best interests in child welfare cases. You may also hear the term family of origin, which is when the child is removed, whoever was caring for that child at the time of removal. It could have been a mom, a dad, a grandparent, just whoever was caring for the child. Another word you'll hear us use today is visitation, but we are moving towards a more accurate word of family contact.
My name is Joy Petrie. I'm the state director of Alaska CASA. When we're looking at teams involved within the child protection system here in Alaska, And we all have the same goal, whether it's the parent attorney, the guardian ad litem, the OCS worker, the parents themselves, the family. We want to see this family healthy and together and safe. It's this whole team surrounding the family that needs to work collaboratively together to move towards reunification. That's the goal in our cases, is reunification, if that's all, at all possible. Visitation with siblings, visitation with parents, visitation with other family members, that's absolutely central to the success of reunification, to the health of the family, and it's what kids and families deserve. There are a lot of bumps and difficulties within child protection, and I mean, especially when a case is first coming in, we know that that contact is so important for the child and the parents. And how can we do that in a way that doesn't feel like it's a punishment or a reward? It's natural to have contact with your child and for a child to be able to have contact with their parent. And how can we do that in a safe way that facilitates healing? So when we're looking at families that are involved in these systems, almost always we're going to see a trauma history within the parents as well. We know that just coming into the system itself, there's another trauma that is happening to children who've already had trauma in their lives. And so when with everything we do, we should be asking ourselves, how do we mitigate the trauma going forward, not just for this child, but for the family? And so taking a family-centered approach definitely is something that can facilitate a healing process that is not further trauma inducing. I've definitely seen where visitation itself can be additional trauma experiences for both the parent and the child. And so how do we mitigate that as much as possible? And that's where I think a family-centered approach can really help with that. One thing all of us professionals have to remember is that we're not going to be involved in these families' lives forever. And so how can we use the time that we are involved to help facilitate any kind of healing or any kind of opportunity for healing within families? One of the cases that I thought of is a case that involved two children. When the first child came into care, the second child hadn't even been born yet. And with the first child, when that child was going to visitation and stuff, it was very, very structured, very monitored, very a different model than what I saw played out over the case. But when the second child came into care, the child was put into a foster family that was very supportive of the parents and wanted to do everything that they could to help with the bonding. Eventually, the case got to a point where both of the children were in the same foster home, and this foster home was extremely supportive and willing to facilitate visitation in various ways and to have contact with the mother. It did not result in reunification, but it created a bonding between the foster family and the mother. For me, that's a huge success because those boys don't have to wonder what happened as they walk through life after being in child protective care. So without it taking on a family-centered approach, I think that this foster family likely wouldn't have had the contact with the mom that they had. There wouldn't have been a relationship built. There wouldn't have been dropping of guards between each other. This foster family got to know the mom and the mom's story versus it being a person that they see in passing when dropping kids off at a facility. They actually got to know each other, and she understood why maybe it didn't work for her to make it to a visit one time or two. It was a relationship building. So it did take time. It took time for them to get to know each other and to drop their judgments about each other and to be authentic with each other as well. But that getting them to talk with each other was really a game changer for those children, I believe. Every family we interact with has a different culture. Every family that we interact with has a different experience. And we should be students of what that is. And really, that should be a question that we're asking ourselves, is what is this family's culture? What are their norms? And recognizing how we bring our own biases in and how we bring our own experiences into these situations. I think that a family-centered approach it's really opening up and allowing for people to be human beings, and for us who are doing the work to be humans as well. Those dynamics have to be something that I think the entire team takes on, of being open and coming at it with a non-judgmental approach of saying what's really going on here. I think that a challenge with that is time and caseloads and all of those kinds of things, but sometimes just little interactions can make a big difference, and taking a minute to have a conversation or to pick up the phone and call, it can make a really big difference.
What she talked about is so important, you know, really humanizing that experience for everyone and remembering that we're there to help this family through a challenge that's occurring. But we aren't there to, you know, beat people down or make people feel poorly. We're helped to raise them up. We're there to help support them in healing. And in order to do that, we have to listen. We have to learn from each other. We have to really engage in this relationship building. And if we're talking about trauma, right, that is what supports a young person, a child, having less traumatic experiences. And I also heard her talking about how that reduced the trauma that the parent was experiencing as well, right? Everyone is working together. People know that the other one is safe, and they're working to heal. That's a huge difference.
And a new part of the new model is that now during family contact, there is parent coaching and feedback given, and it's not done in a judgmental way. Now the family contact facilitators or family time supporters, which we'll talk about later, actively help the parents learn how to engage with their child in a safe and positive way.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but if it's me and I'm having like my worst day, if I have somebody who I don't trust telling me that this is how I need to do something, or potentially writing down all the ways that I'm failing, I don't know that I would want to engage, you know. But if I have somebody beside me who really shows me that they care and value me as a human and want to help, I'm much more inclined to make changes within myself that can help me grow.
The relationship between the family and the foster parents or the kinship placement is so important, as she also pointed out in her example. If there is no trust, no wish to help them get together, then there's going to be barriers after barriers put up. The first part is getting them to talk. And then the next is helping them stay in communication about what's happening in their child's life.
We also had the opportunity to talk with Judge Jonathan Woodman of the 3rd Judicial District in Palmer. And, you know, he really provides another perspective on how a family-centered approach improves the outcomes for the parents, the children, and everyone who's really involved as part of this partnership.
And it's fantastic because he's been on the bench through this whole transition to the new family-centered approach.
I'm Judge Jonathan Woodman. I am the Deputy Presiding Judge of the Palmer Courthouse in Palmer, Alaska. We serve a jurisdiction of about 100,000 citizens, and I am now the Presiding Judge of what is a pilot court in Alaska called the Families with Infants and Toddlers Court. So it is a child need of aid court, a therapeutic child need of aid court that is primarily focused on children who are 0 to 5 years of age. It's not unusual, especially I think in the jurisdiction where I preside, that there's a somewhat of an adversarial approach to an ordinary kind of case where people can kind of dig in their heels and they view each other as adversaries rather than team members. There's not a lot of discussion about how to get the parents what they need. And so I think there's a reluctance on the part of parents' counsel and the parents to be open about what the parents' problems are. There's a lot of barriers that are put up and it doesn't really help the family or the child involved. Whereas we take a collaborative approach in the FIT court, and we bring everybody together. And it's an opt-in program, so nobody's forced to come into it. Parents are given the opportunity to join if they qualify. but they're not required to join, and they can leave anytime they want. But when they come in, we make it clear to them that, you know, we're going to expect you to be very open with us and very honest with us. And we're going to want you to tell us what you need from us so that we can help you and help provide you the necessary tools to make the changes that you want to make and that you need to make. And so they come in, we have these family team meetings, but we come in, and I'm not there obviously, but the team comes together and they speak very frankly, very candidly about what's actually happening in the family, how the parents are progressing and what their stumbles have been. And we recognize that there's going to be stumbles. The pathway to reunification of a family is very rarely smooth. And there's going to be progress, but there's also going to be, you know, some regression that happens. And we just have to approach it and deal with it and openly and honestly with the family. And then we come into court and we have a chance. They then get to talk to me about what's been going on in the family. But again, we approach the whole process as one of, we're a team and we're working together. And so, you know, we try to make it clear to parents, we're not going to punish you if you tell us that you've had an issue or that you're struggling and you need our help. Asking for help is encouraged, not discouraged. Certainly the thing that it does is that it enhances the chances that there's going to be a reunification of the family. You know, the ultimate goal, if safe and appropriate, is reunification. And that's what's best for kids, is to be returned to their family origin. One of the other things that we do too is every family that comes into our FIT court is enrolled in child parent psychotherapy, which is an opportunity for the child to get therapy, for the parent to get therapy, for them to have therapy together, and for someone to be able to observe the parents interacting with the children to make those interactions even more meaningful. And so I think that's very helpful to the children, is that they get a chance that somebody's helping their parent be a better parent. And of course, the other thing too that we have with our FIT court is that family contact is of such importance to the families and to the children especially. And so we highlight the need for increased family contact so that the children are able to maintain those relationships with their parents, even if they're not living with their family of origin. In this line of work, not every story has a happy ending, in that sometimes after people have committed their very best effort, they just aren't able to address the issues that are keeping them from being a safe and appropriate parent. But in what I would call my more traditional cases, it's not unusual that the parents in those situations feel like other people are to blame and that they haven't been given enough support. And they'll often express that if they had been given more support or if they'd been given more chances, that they would have been able to meet the requirements that we've set for them. And there's oftentimes a lot of hard feeling when you get to those cases, that people feel like they've been cheated somehow. And we see a lot less of that in FIT court. In those cases that we've had where there had to be ultimately a termination of parental rights, most of the time, by the time we get there, the parents acknowledge that, you know, you gave me all the help that I asked for, and you were there for me when I said I needed help. And in the end, people feel like they've been given every opportunity to reunify, and that when it can't happen, they at least realize that it wasn't because the system didn't give them what they needed. If you can come to that realization and then come to the realization that my child needs something more than or different than what I can give them, that really is a breakthrough moment.
To me, that's the difference. When you're working with a team who you know believes in you and sees you for who you are outside of this one terrible moment in your life, you know, they believe in your success, you start to see your own ability to move forward. And there are still opportunities for connection and support, even when things end differently than you had hoped. And I think both of the people we interviewed today really highlight how that can look and how things can really build hope and connection.
Judge Wendman also touched on the fact that parents are embarrassed to ask for help because of previous experiences with the Child Protective Services. Our hardest cases that we have that come into our family contact facility are what we call repeaters. And it's because they had that initial trauma before that they weren't helped, and they don't feel like we were helpful. And it's hard to get them to see our new model of the parent coaching and feedback.
As professionals and people who support families, I think that it's important that we are always striving to grow and do better ourselves. And, you know, there's a lot of opportunity for growth between this former model and this family-centered approach, where we are able to be evidence-based and research-informed and really hold space for healing to happen and be the professionals we want to. We want to be able to provide that support for families.
Our biggest goal is to ensure these families get back together in a healthy and safe way. And there's no better way than for all of us to work collaboratively.
Thank you for listening today. A big thank you to Joy Petrie and Jonathan Woodman for their time and expertise. This podcast is produced by the Butler Institute for Families at the University of Denver with support from the Rock Map Zoo and the Family Contact Improvement Partnership. Production by Sarah Roman, story collection by Krista Doty, with support from Carol Wilcox, Emily Houck, and me. I'm Kristen Clark. Please join us next time when we discuss culturally centered family contact and the impact of implicit bias.